Life and other catastrophes. If it's worrying you, it's probably worrying a whole lot of other people as well. Jane Fisher joins us. She is the Finkel Professor of Global Health at Monash University. How are you going, Jane?
I'm well, thanks, Raf.
Let's start with the Jean Hales Women's Health Annual Survey. I'll start with the number. 40% of women reporting anxiety. Is that the number you'd expect?
Well, I was quite surprised. It seemed high to me, and it made me wonder what was leading people to endorse that question. But it was a very large number of women in the survey, more than 10,000, and they represented all states and territories, rural, regional, urban. So they were asked about, do they feel nervous, anxious, on edge most of the time? You know, I think it's every day or once a week or whatever. So a high proportion of women, and an even higher proportion among the younger women, 18 to 35. And this isn't the only survey that's found that. So there have been other surveys of parents that seem to be finding this higher rate of disclosure of stress, anxiety, being on edge. I think it's important we understand it. What's the source of the worry? What would help? And what are people doing about it? How much disability is it causing, as you said?
How much does it interrupt your life? 1300 222 774. Just on our Facebook page, we're just asking what worries you. So Meredith's got what to have for dinner. Rick's got being underemployed and wanting to work more. Alan, the robo debt I've been battling for almost 3 years. Terry, the direction of politics in this country, the UK and the US. Long-term consequences of conservatism, impact of climate change. Ross, the lack of democratic rights and freedom of press. So I don't know if they fall into what I would think of as anxiety, but maybe that's the... I'm going to go back a step, Jane. Are we more anxious or worried than we were, say, 40 years ago, or are we just measuring it more and more able to put it into words?
Well, it's a good question. I think we didn't measure it in the same way 40 years ago, so we can only speculate. I wonder if it's partly that people are now feeling freer to name and describe that state of mind, that experience, or maybe it is genuinely that the world is a more difficult, less certain place to live in. And certainly, living with diffuse things, uncertain things, and things over which you feel you have little agency or control, that can make people feel agitated.
Mm.
But you'd have to say, in general terms, the circumstances of most of our quality of life and living situations are better than they would have been 40 years ago.
So why are we more worried?
I think it's a great question. I'm hoping people listening to this can help us understand it.
1300 222 774 is the number. Jumping off point for this really is a survey from the Jean Hales Centre, but I think one of the other results that comes through consistently, women report being more worried than men. Why do you think that is, Jane? Women constantly report that more than men. Why?
Well, it's a very consistent finding, as you say. They report being more worried, and they also report more problems with low mood. And, there's all sorts of theories about it. And the main theories have been that women carry a higher burden of unpaid work.
Mental load.
Mental load and physical load. So that's a disproportionate risk. Women are more likely to have been exposed to forms of violence, discrimination, hostile behaviours from others. And that contributes to this.
Because they live in a patriarchy is the short answer, isn't it?
Well,
it's a man's world, right? That's the short way of saying what you're saying or not?
I think it is the short way of saying that. Whether that continues to be true, that in general has improved. You know, there are far fewer systematic inequalities. There are, forms of discrimination that are no longer legal. Women are meant to have equality of access. We know they don't.
But at the same time, you're right to point to lots of improvement, but the anxiety and the worry's gone up.
And that's the mystery, which I would really like to understand. And I think the fact that women report it more doesn't mean that men don't feel it. And it might be they express it in a different way or use a different idiom to describe it.
It's coming up to 18 minutes to 5. Talking about what worries you and why. I guess we're also talking about why we're worried. Stephen's calling from Carlton. Stephen, what do you want to say?
G'day, Raph. Like, if you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, if we can't get the basic layer right, which is like those psychological needs for a person, you know, where they live, that they're able to buy food, that they can pay their electricity bills, you know, with those cost of living pressures or people who might be renting and having to move or even having mortgage stress, they're basic fundamental, you know,
but worries aren't linked to our income, are they?
Pardon?
Worry is not linked to our socioeconomic status. There are people who are fabulously rich, who are full of anxiety, and there are also people who are fabulously poor, full of anxiety.
But then the further you go up the scale, their fulfillment needs, what they're doing in their day-to-day lives, are they fulfilled in what they do? They might be working 80 hours a week. Are they seeing their family? Are they seeing their friends? Are they doing what they love?
Yeah, interesting.
Look, I think Stephen has an important point here, and in general, severity of worry is more concentrated among people with fewer resources, and it's less concentrated at the where people have more and have more agency. I think this is an interesting point. Is it that people are feeling that their housing is less secure, that their jobs are less secure, that it's more difficult to pay for their daily needs? There's certainly some speculation that because employment has shifted so much to being contractual, short-term, people don't have the benefits of any leave, sick leave, etc., that is a source of worry.
Jess is in West Footscray. Jess, what do you want to say?
The thing that I'm finding it's created increased anxiety for myself is just the way that we communicate to each other these days. I just find that there's so much more ambiguity in the way that we communicate. I grew up without the internet, but have the internet now, and now I'm around people that only grew up with the internet and social media. How we all communicate with each other these days, with all, say, from things from like the social justice side of things right through, like, it's made me feel really, really anxious about what the future's going to be like.
Why, just pinpoint for me what you mean, Jess. Why is the communication via the web and social media, why does that make you more anxious?
I think because so many people throw stuff out there that it just creates these kind of like bombs that just keep going off, where I think before we used to sort of be a bit more reserved before we went off tap about something or went off tap about an issue that we could actually have an argument and listen to other people's opinions. Now it just seems to be that everyone's just throwing rocks and calling people out.
So like we're more exposed to the passions and hatreds of other peoples, and that has an emotional impact.
It just seems to be more extreme. Mm. Like, you just feel like you're constantly walking on eggshells around things, and I just personally find that...
Can I ask you, Jess, do you think it makes you anxious even if it's not directed at you? So if it's if it's a more diffuse sort of critical comment?
Yeah, I do. I just seem to find that there just seems to be so much more kind of happening in the world. And after a while, it just starts to permeate through and create, for me personally, it's just created this strange anxiousness. Like, I feel more anxious now than I did, say, 15 years ago.
Yeah, really.
That's
interesting,
very
Jess.
Interesting.
Yeah, great to hear from you. Maybe Jane Fisher is with me for Life and Other Catastrophes every Monday. Maybe, Jane, a few people texting, there's a difference between anxiety and worry, and I suspect that's a similar boundary they're aiming for between being worried about something and then being able to do it, or being anxious about it and feeling that your normal life is impacted in some ways. Is that a helpful way to think about it, whether or not it's impacting on your normal life?
I think it is. And I think, as Jess points out, it's perhaps not always easy to recognise that it is having an impact.
Yes.
But if you know, she said she could notice a difference over the last 15 years, that she's more on edge, more vigilant, more watchful. These are difficult dimensions of human experience, really, to define in very crisp ways. But I think it is helpful to think of it as a dimension along which we all range.
But it's also frustrating, isn't it? Because if someone says to you, listen, is your anxiety stopping you doing day-to-day things? That sounds like a really helpful question. It's often what we throw up there as well. That's the test. That's the high jump bar or the hurdle you go to. Okay, now I need to see a counsellor, some professional help. But that's actually quite hard to define, isn't it? Is my worry stopping me leading a normal life? I mean, that's incredibly vague.
I think that's incredibly difficult to pick and then to attribute it to that cause. But it probably is, if we think about it, is the worry making me less likely to go out at certain times, less likely to do some things I would otherwise have done? Am I feeling like my sleep is less good because I'm ruminating at night? So it might be those perhaps softer, more non-specific things. They're not stopping you necessarily functioning, but maybe they're interfering with functioning with the degree of confidence and pleasure that you'd like to be experiencing.
Not sure. I can't work out if that's really helpful or still opaque. 1300.
It's opaque because I don't think there's an easy answer.
No, it's a very. I throw that question at you because it's constantly the threshold we use in our public discussions. Yet I find that a really murky boundary. When does anxiety impede you having a quote unquote normal life? I find those terms very difficult to define.
I think sometimes it's pretty hard to recognise yourself, and it's sometimes when other people point it out to you that your anxiety is becoming a problem for me, that might be a point of recognition.
Oh, well, I think that'd be very helpful. Mm. That's not opaque at all. That's a red flashing warning light. I'm hoping.
In every life we have some trouble, but when you worry you make it double. Don't worry, be happy.
Jane Fisher is with us. Jane, why is it such a provocative thing to tell someone who's worried to just chill out? Why does that make it worse?
Well, I think one of the things that goes with worry is feeling powerless, is feeling you can't do much about it. And so to have someone say to you, just relax,
be more powerless,
can make you feel more powerless. Whereas if someone, I think, tries to engage you in problem solving, that's what we all have to get good at, is making this diffuse sense of uncertainty more specific. What is it that I'm really worried about and how can I act on it? It's not always easy to do, but I think that's a more helpful response.
Trying to locate the free-floating anxiety in your life. Graham's in Oakley. What do you want to say, Graham?
Oh, hi, Ben Jane. Far be it from me to summarise the human psyche in a couple of seconds.
I'll give it a go.
Okay, I will. I'm pretty clever. As an older guy, I've got memories going back to the early 1950s, and I'd say two things. One is that our expectations of life have risen dramatically, and I think that's partly because of technological development allowing us to do all sorts of things, and also a huge invasion of media into our life, which, I don't need to go into that, advertising and social media telling you you want this or you should be this or do this.
I think it's a good point. Tell us what you think that does.
We expect to match what we see. And the other thing I think is, which is also hangs off technological development, is our perception of risk. We think that we should be able to ameliorate all the things that threaten us, and that's a reasonable expectation to some degree because of advances in things like medical science and physical security and all sorts of things, and the material comfort of our life. But I think along with that, it's a bit like time and money. It doesn't matter how much you have, you want more, and I think our perception of risk sort of follows that. Even though our risks in many, many ways, fiscal risks are much, much lower than they were decades ago, let alone centuries, we because of our perception of control and our, we lose practice at accepting things that we just can't control. And so we just worry about them more, even though they're really better than they used to be.
Well, I think there's a lot of wisdom there, and it would be interesting to know if Graham has a solution or if it's something that's just inevitable.
Stop worrying. Yeah,
I have been known to worry once or twice in my life. Myself.
I'm sure. No, haven't we all, Graham? Look, great to hear from you. Deidre, not a real name, is calling from Currumburra. I think I've got some sense of why Deidre doesn't want to use her real name right now. What do you want to tell us?
Well, I don't normally worry, but a couple of months ago, out of the blue, I was diagnosed with bone cancer. And as part of that treatment, I had to see a specialist today, and because my teeth aren't in marvellous condition because of my age, on Friday I'm having all my teeth taken out. So I'm worrying.
Of course you're worrying, and what an awful predicament to find yourself in. I'm really sorry. So what you've described to us is very legitimate sources of worry. This is a terrible illness that's causing these consequences for you. Are other people being able to assist you with the worry that goes with this?
Not really. It really hasn't even impacted on me very much. When I talk about it, I feel like I'm talking about somebody else and not me. Do you understand that?
Do you think you need to talk to someone about it?
No. But you know what I mean?
I do. Has it changed your perspective?
I'm not finding it relevant to me just yet, but I will.
I think that can happen at the beginning. As you're trying to absorb really shocking news, it can be really hard to believe that this is real and this is me and this is now. And that probably will grow. But it's probably really useful to take a few people into your confidence and...
I will. I have got a couple of people that I rely on. And I've got three wonderful sons, so I'm very grateful for that. Anyway, I thought I'd ring in the worry.
Well, we wish you very well with your treatment.
Thank you.
Good luck. That is, of course, the perspective changer. So I guess what I wonder, Jane, and you wish Deirdre all the best, a lot of people, I want to get to the worry-free before I hear about someone who's facing something I can't imagine, a difficulty that I can't conceive of because I haven't heard about it. How helpful is it hearing the stories of others who are in a really tough place? Do you think that's helpful?
Well, I think it can sometimes be a very useful perspective gauge that we can then perhaps really gauge by that process of comparison. Well, look, the fact I left my lunch home today is really inconsequential compared with what somebody else is facing.
Can I be a bit rough and tough? Because, and my heart goes out to Deirdre, but I find that approach a bit frustrating. I would personally be more satisfied with something that every day in a gentle way changes my perspective so that I am happy with my lot, wondering at the beauty of the clouds, enjoying the sunshine. I get a bit worried if I hear that people need to hear the toughest of times going on in other people's lives. Like, to need to be shocked into appreciating what you've got, that's a few steps down a path I don't want to be down.
I increasingly think we need philosophy, not psychology. Really what we're talking about, I think, is existential questions. And I think philosophy actually has helpful things to say to us about sort of realising we have one life and we have one life now and we need to, respond to what life sends us from a particular sort of set of principles, really, or values. Or
have you got a philosopher in mind, or are you reading any philosophy that is sparking your interest?
I wish I could say yes, but every time I read philosophy, I do find it almost more helpful than psychological explanations, as you've talked about. That really, it's being able to think about our lives in, I think, probably a more appreciative way. That there is no perfect life, that our one choice is about how we respond to what life gives us, and we can respond to that appreciatively, assertively, respectfully, but if we expect it to be perfect or fair, then I think there's going to be disappointment and difficulty.
Do you think that's what it boils to? Down to, that's our one choice, our perception?
If I was asked to distill it right down, probably that is. What do you think?
I'm inclined to agree, but I've got to get to so many other things, so I'm going to leave it there right now. Thanks so much, Jane.
Thanks for having me.
Jane Fisher joins us every week for Life and Other Catastrophes. She's the Finkel Professor of Global Health at Monash University.